Hey, I'm in Decatur, Georgia. And, well, this is the second go-around because you'll never hear the first go-around because I wasn't recording. I am sitting in a wonderful, beautiful kitchen where a lot of pies have been made because I'm with Chris Taylor and Paul Argon.
Argon.
Who have written a beautiful book called The New Pie, Modern Techniques for the Classic American Dessert. It is a beautiful book with pictures by my favorite food photographer, who is Andrew Thomas Lee, and published by the same publisher that I am proud to be involved with, which is Clarkson Potter. And it is an amazing book that comes from two people who are not in this industry. Both of them come from medical backgrounds and researching backgrounds and work at the CDC, or actually Paul is now retired as of last week. Congratulations, Paul.
Thank you very much.
And Chris, you're still there, and you work in what field?
I work with Alzheimer's disease and healthy aging in older adults.
That is an amazingly important thing, mostly to me. My father has almost Alzheimer's, but this book is just amazing. I want to talk about pie as this endless... You've created as a continuum, as something that's not set in stone as this is pie. You're saying you can bring anything to pie. So explain that.
Yeah, I mean, pie really is, you know, has endless possibilities. One of the, you know, when you buy a lot of baking books or when you buy a lot of pie or see a lot of recipes, you know, it's apple pie, it's cherry pie, it's blueberry pie, it's lemon meringue, it's banana cream. There's sort of like a set number that's out there and they just sort of get shuffled around. But when we started making pie, we really started thinking, what can we bring into pie? And really we learned you can bring anything into pie, you know, different flavors. You know, we find inspiration out in restaurants, trying a new drink, you know, looking at, you know, candy bar flavors, ice cream flavors, you know, really anything out there you can bring into a pie shell in some way.
There's a lot of pie history there, too, though. I mean, are you edging away from the traditional formality of pie into a new realm? Is that dangerous?
I don't think it's dangerous. No,
it's the history enough.
No. I think it's very exciting. I think you can start with these classic pies, and you can see. I think you have to start with them really to understand how they're made. You know what are the key steps that have to happen to make sure the crust is brown, that the filling is set, that you can have the layers of flavor that you want. And then once you understand the mechanics of it, then feel free. You can start making new things.
So the book goes through and really talks and goes through the techniques that they use. And these are not a lot of regular techniques. You're airbrushing at some points. You're doing some crazy things with pies, which I like. But at the beginning, you really talk about weights and measures and the importance of weighing things. But then you go through and you did capitulate to the American stream, which is you gave volume measurements, you give standard weight, and then you give metric weight. Now you're thoroughly in the camp of metric weight, which I'm totally with you because I think that the imperial system was designed by Satan's younger brother, Louis, who just really, it doesn't make any sense. 128 ounces is a gallon. Why is that? We will never know. But the beauty of the metric system is a kilogram of water is a liter.
Yes.
And that's kind of across the board.
Yeah. It's a great standard.
And you mentioned earlier, what, a pint is a pound?
Yeah, they say a pint's a pound the world around, but it's really not. It's almost a pound, but not
metric
quite.
Is so precise that they redid the kilogram recently.
That's right. It was like decaying, and they're like, we got to get another one.
There was somebody whose full-time job was like watching
muttering
the kilogram.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. That's the due diligence that metric has. And imperial due diligence is like 300 years old, and that guy's dead. So I think we just need to move on. And it's really important in baking. You know, I'm a fine dining chef. But when it comes to weights and measures in the world of the pastry department at work, it is really important to weigh and measure perfectly when you're coming up with pastry stuff.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and it's not just because we're trying to be fussy about it. It really makes a huge difference in the outcome of the product you're trying to make. And I think, you know, one of the things you had mentioned earlier, it's cleaner as well. You can measure directly right into your bowls. You don't have additional measuring spoons that are covered in sticky stuff. Yeah, that's fantastic.
It is a game changer in buying a scale, but that means you have to buy a good scale. But you guys go through the equipment needed, and there's a lot of equipment that, even though I'm a pro in this, though not in pastry. I had no idea that there were pie crust shields. Explain a pie crust shield.
Sure. It's just a simple aluminum disc with the center cut out that you can place right on the edge of your crimped crust. So
prior to baking or halfway through, so it doesn't get additional browning?
In fact, we use it for many different. So the intended purpose is usually towards the end of the bake. You would just pop it on towards the end if your edge is starting to get a little too brown. We find it useful for many other parts of the pie making process as well. So let's say when you're filling a pie, so you have a partially blind baked crust, and you want to start pouring in a big messy nut filling that has chocolate and
sticky toffee thing that's going to go everywhere.
It's going to splash. Put on your pie crust shield, first of all, and then you can pour right in. You're not going to get splashes and drips on the edge.
Because if you get splashes and drips, they will burn in the oven.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then oftentimes, if you're going to have, brushed an egg wash, a decorative egg wash on the crust, again, if you don't want it to brown too much, go ahead and pop your shield on.
That is an amazing thing. And then pie weights, we go through instant read thermometers, which I think are critical for everybody in any kitchen.
Yes.
A scale. You have the most beautiful picture of using different styles of piping tips when you're decorating pies. And the picture is of this white icing done in about 10 different styles. And it's an amazing picture in really distinguishing what all those different tips are doing.
You haven't said the one thing about it that is we think is particularly cool.
What kind of pie is it?
Well, no. It's a pie chart is what it is. It's a pie chart.
It's a pie chart.
Yeah, so for epidemiologists, for scientists, we made a scientific graphic out of our piping tips.
But that's the important thing about this book is you guys, to take this in the right way, but you guys are like the nerds of piedom.
I'll take it.
I love that. but nerddoms, you know, people have to, even on NPR, when they refer to the word nerd, they're usually apologetic prior to it. Mm-hmm. And I don't understand that.
Yeah.
Nerds run the world. And it's the smart people who can really take something that's rote and basic and bring it to the next level of diving into it and looking at it from a different perspective and giving it clarity with that. So I'm all in favor of nerds. And then we talk about silicone mats and silicone pastry molds, stencils. What are you doing with stencils and pie?
So actually for one of our pies, the Pie of the Tiger, it has a whipped cream topping. And you can just do a whipped cream topping or you can pipe it.
These are big on the puns, aren't you?
Yeah. Yes,
it's
that's
true.
That's all, yeah. Chris. Yeah.
Eye of the Tiger. Okay. Yeah.
And so it has sort of like cookie pieces in it. So when you slice it, it looks like tiger stripes. And so we found a tiger stripe stencil that we put on the top and sprinkled some cocoa over it. And so now, it's tiger all over.
It is tiger all over. And then I flipped to the page with you guys airbrushing a very elaborate pre-baked or blind-baked pie shell. Explain this.
And so that one is blind-baked. And that's the key with the coloring process.
Yeah, so there's a lot of ways you can color a crust. And a lot of people color it before they bake. You know, they either color the dough or they will paint on like a colored egg wash. But in order to really tell if your pie is done, you have to make sure that it's golden brown. And so I think that impedes your ability to tell when you have a great golden brown crust. And even, once you have a golden brown crust, you now have a golden brown green crust or a golden brown red crust. It's never a pure color.
Oftentimes you lose that color if you do the color prior to the bake. Yeah, I think you have to think of pie crust as sort of almost like a little living creature. So you can sculpt it, something like what the page you're on right now, but you cannot expect to retain that crisp shape because it's going to puff, it's going to brown, it's going to move around a little bit.
And it's puffing because of the way you're making it. And let's talk about the specifics of pie crust and what people historically are doing wrong when they're making it, because it's so simple as ingredients, yet so many people, pardon the French, fuck it up.
Yep.
So why, to me, it's the creation of cold butter cutting into it, or leaf lard or whatever it is that you're using as a fat, interlacing and not mixing it too much, so that oil, essentially the butter or the fat, is basically going between layers of the flour and creating those layers by cooking up and expanding it.
Absolutely right. So you're right. It's three simple ingredients to make the most basic pie crust: fat, flour, and water. Because you do want some gluten to form so that your crust can hold together. It has to have some structure. The fat is between all those little layers, intercalating between all those gluten sheets that you've made. And then as it bakes, it's going to get some steam. It's going to puff, and you're going to get those crisp layers. And so ideal, if you've made it right, you don't want too much gluten to have formed so that it's a tough, chewy crust, but it'll slice, it'll be crisp. And then we add a couple of other ingredients as well to give it a little flavor, some salt, some sugar.
And vinegar, often, which is key to a lot of old Southern recipes, is that it was kind of the unheralded hero of the pie crust, which is vinegar.
Oh, I actually did not know that.
Yeah.
So we got it. So most of what we've learned from cookbooks. So we've got it. You walked past it when you came in the house. We've got a cookbook library over there. And so as we were reading all about ways to make pie crust, we've tried all these different things that people have used. And so I forget where we picked up vinegar from, probably from Rose.
Yeah, probably from Rose Levy Barenbaum. And we also picked up baking powder.
Who wrote the cake Bible?
Correct, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And we also add a little bit of baking powder, which I think adds a little bit of puff, and so it makes it seem a little flakier because you get a little more air between those flaky layers that are forming.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then handling it. I mean, how critical is the shortening to be cold?
We use when we make the crust, our butter is cold.
Okay.
But we use a little bit of vegetable shortening, and we use that room temperature actually, which some people probably think is sacrilege. But
and to be fair, I mean, where you're sitting right now, I think we tend to keep the house a little cool anyway.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like 42 degrees. No, it's totally normal temperature for the South, which is hot outside and cold inside.
Yeah, there we go.
And that's the expectation. So then we go through, and you've got cream pies. You've got this Pie of the Tiger, obviously. Explain Pittsburgh Proud.
Oh, so I lived in Pittsburgh. I grew up near Pittsburgh, and so I spent a lot of time there. And, you know, we have a lot of regional variations of food in the U.S. If you say something is maybe if something is like Greek style, you know, it probably has maybe lemons, spinach. California, like if you get a California BLT, you know, it's going to have an avocado on it.
Yeah.
Well, in Pittsburgh, if you order a Pittsburgh salad or a Pittsburgh sandwich, it's going to have French fries on it. And so we sort of took that ode. We have a chocolate.
Being scientists and medical practitioners, what's the living expectancy, life expectancy in Pittsburgh?
Well,
also Pittsburgh in the steak world is like blood rare.
Yeah, which is different. I actually don't know the origin of that.
I don't know
if
it's from Pittsburgh either.
Yeah.
I thought it was because it's black and blue.
Black and blue,
yeah. So it's blue meat because it's raw, essentially, and then you just burn it on the outside.
Yeah. Which, the French term for rare is bleu in French, so which makes sense. So, okay, back to Pittsburgh Proud.
Yes.
So it's a chocolate, almost a chocolate silk filling. We made it with some boiled beer from Yingling, which is a Pennsylvania bakery.
Brewery.
Yeah. And it's topped, instead of French fries, our sort of baking culinary equivalent is chocolate-covered potato sticks. And so it's great. You get this salty crunch with the creamy chocolate filling, and it's in a cocoa pastry crust, and it's sort of our ode to Western Pennsylvania.
It's totally whack. It's great. There's still this love of the classic pie, even though you're pushing the boundaries on a lot of things, you're creating new pies along the way. But then we get to Aunt Melba's peach pie, which to me, we're in Georgia, and I talked about this on a recent episode with somebody else, is that we are the peach state. We're not the leading in peaches anymore.
No.
That's South Carolina, but they're really weird over there. Pearson Peaches and a number of other small farms in Georgia are just doing a fantastic job. I will, without rescinding my Georgia citizenship, say that Colorado peaches are pretty spectacular these days.
Ooh, okay.
They're amazing, Palisades peaches, but they're bigger, really huge peaches.
And do you get them here, or do you go to Colorado to get them?
I have to go to Colorado.
Okay, all right.
But I go to Aspen every summer, so I eat a lot of peaches. But explain a peach pie. Mostly explain the filling and how, when we're talking about fruit fillings, what are we binding with that's making it not too soupy?
Oh, so that's, I think that's all throughout the fruit section of the book. So there are different techniques and methods that I use, but I think you get to the heart of it right there, is that different fruits, especially different times of the year, are not going to perform the same way. So if I'm developing my my peach pie here at the peak of peach season, and maybe I'm going to use frozen peaches later in the year, or some kind of imported Chilean peach later in the year that's shelf stable for some reason.
Meaningly tastes like plastic.
Yeah, so who knows? But you have to be prepared to deal with that. And so some of the techniques we have in there, especially with sous vide, allow you to account for the juiciness of the fruit at the time. I think the peach one you picked, so that one, I actually purposefully freeze them, thaw them. At that point, it'll... The ice crystals that form when the peach is frozen are going to break apart some of the cell walls. As it thaws, the peaches are now a little bit more floppy. They've
kind of macerated through the freezing and then the thawing.
And the juice comes out. So I put them right into a colander. And so now I can measure how much juice is there and I can account for that. I do the same thing with sous-viding apples. Again, I sous-vide the apples and then I separate out the released juice from the actual fruit parts. And again, I can use the exact amount of that fruit juice.
But are you reintroducing that juice back into the pie filling?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So,
but you're compensating for how much liquid is being produced.
I count it. I measure it. Exactly. So I see exactly how much.
You guys really are nerds.
Yeah. No, but it makes such a difference, because if I just told you to put in, again, 3 tablespoons of cornstarch or something like that to X number of pounds of apples, maybe right now that's going to be spot on perfect. And then maybe later it's going to be dry and pasty. And then later on in the year, it'll be soupy.
Yeah. What's your favorite apple to use for apple pie?
Difficult question. Only because, so I use different apples. The book, I've used apples that I think people are going to be able to find most of the time. So I focused on Golden Delicious and Granny Smith are the ones. I think another pie uses some Macintosh, because we cook them down into applesauce. Mm-hmm. But I'd say if I had to pick one, I don't know. Actually, and it's also relatively easy to find most of the time, but Gala apples make a surprisingly delicious pie.
So what are you looking for in a good apple for apple pie? To me, I think you're looking for, without the addition of too much sugar, you're looking for natural sweetness, but still an inherent tartness to things. That's why Granny Smiths are popular. You're mm-hmm. looking for a really firm texture and tight texture to the apple.
I still like some chew on my apple. So, and I think we have three different methods of making apple pies in the book. And I think each one of them, it focuses on getting the apple cooked to the point where you can get that the inherent apple-y flavor out of it, but still have a good bite. You can still taste that you're chewing on an apple piece.
My favorite apple is, for baking like that, is actually my favorite eating apple as well, which is an Arkansas Black. Which is a more obscure southern variety of apple, but you see them in prime apple season in September or October in Georgia, and they're great, but you just don't see them as much.
I gotta say, I think that skin is chewy.
Oh, you gotta peel the skin.
Yeah. Oh, do you?
Get that out of the way.
Oh, all right. Okay, so you eat them peeled.
Yep.
Okay, all right.
Now, the only thing I'm remiss on in this book is that You talk about some savory uses of pies, and you guys have entered many, many contests and things like that. And we'll talk about that in a little while too. But there's no tomato pie recipe. Do you guys make tomato pie?
I have not made a tomato pie.
I mean, that is like decidedly southern.
Yeah.
Tomato pie, but buttermilk tomato pie.
I guess we sort of have one. So in the cocktail section, I don't know if you noticed it, there's a we call it our hangover pie.
Did you guys get that? There's a cocktail section in a pie book.
Yeah, so we have one specific pie that's a hangover pie. It's called the Hair of the Dog, and so that is, it's like a Bloody Mary is what it is, but it's not a the slices of tomato pie.
My daughter was looking through the book, she's 15, and she saw the strawberry margarita pie, and she's like, "Does that actually have booze in it? Because that looks good." I was like, "I don't know, but no, you're not allowed to have that."
And so, yes, it does.
Unless you get your fake ID ready. So I brought another couple of books, and to me, the Southern pie thing is always really interesting. When we talk about, this is an old book called Bell's Best, And it's an old Southern cookbook. You know, it's got a lot of crap recipes in it too, but some if the pie section is pretty amazing. Like this is the pie section.
Oh, that's fun.
Wow.
So you know, let's talk about chess pie. Mm-hmm. Do you guys make a variation of chess pie?
I've made a chess pie. We don't have a chess pie in
the
book.
We don't make them too often.
Yeah.
Yeah, like,
chess pie is a really interesting thing. It's kind of reminiscent of buttermilk pie,
mm-hmm.
Which is great. But those are really simple. And we think the derivation of chest is actually a misspelling of chest. It would be for the pie chest. It was this just the most ubiquitous proletariat pie of mm-hmm. all time. Because literally it's sugar, butter, flour, egg yolks, egg whites, milk, salt, nutmeg, vanilla. And a pie shell.
I've also heard it say the derivation is actually from the word just. What kind of pie did you make? Just pie.
Just pie.
Yeah.
Just pie. Yep. Yeah. Yep. And then in Tennessee, they take them and they stack them. And they stack like four pies on top of each other. So then you slice it, you've got a four-layered pie.
Oh, wow.
So there's all these cool things. And then I'm from Canada, and the savory pie of Quebec is tortillere.
Oh, yeah. I love tortillere.
Lovely ground pork mm-hmm. and redolent with sort of nutmeg and mace and things like that. And it's like savory beyond belief. But when it's made right, that crust is so beautifully flavored with pork fat
mm-hmm.
That you just, it's like so porky, porcine.
Yeah, it's so good.
But it's great. So what, if you guys have dedicated your smarts and the way you look at food to a book on pie, I want you to do something else. Because I think the way you're writing in this book is so analytic and interesting, yet sort of revelatory and happy about pie. That is there another topic that intrigues you on that?
Tons. Yeah. No, in fact, we maintain long lists of things that we're developing more recipes. We've got new book ideas.
But is it going to be cakes? Because if you wrote the definitive pie book, can you go cake? Because if you're team pie, you're team pie.
Well, if you're challenging me, I can take that challenge.
I'm not laying down a gauntlet.
But cake wasn't our next plan, actually.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like our next plan is cookies.
Oh, we like cookies.
Yeah.
I think cookies is a fun dessert. And I think, too, it's also endless. You know, the way you can incorporate things. And, you know, pie is sort of unique because it's, you know, you get one pie and you can serve 12 people from it. But with a cookie, everyone gets a cookie. It's a different cookie, except for bar cookies, which is an exception. There's like this weird continuum of where do you go from like slab pie to bar cookie. I'm not quite sure like where that line is drawn.
Yeah.
But it's sort of a different thing. But you can, you know, you have all these options for mix-ins. You can make them bigger or smaller. You can make them ahead and freeze them. It's just they're very adaptable. Again, just like pie with different flavors, just sort of in a different way.
Yeah, the bar thing is where does that stop? That's interesting. There's a really decidedly Western Canadian bar called the Nanaimo Bar, mm-hmm. Which is very Canadian. This very, very sweet expat Canadian in Athens, Georgia. Every year it brings me a batch of Nanaimo bars to remind me of where I'm from. I don't think she's doing it in a sort of forceful reminder, but they're really good. They're saccharine sweet and really good. And then the other, so this that Bell's Best book is really interesting, but it's so many looks at pies in the typical sense in the old Southern vernacular. And then we get to Edna Lewis, and Edna talks about a lot of simple pies too. Now with Edna, they're not under pie in the index, it's under desserts. She's very clear about that at one point. But she goes through the just different boysenberries and blackberry pies and things like that and talks about, and then the writing on pastry shells is really definitive too, but not so much as weights and measures. And I think that's where your book really differentiates from the rest is that because of that, your ability to have a success, while reading through the recipe is much higher with such dedication to detail and weights and measures. Southern recipes were often, you know, 8 ingredients and a short paragraph and how you do it. And what that relied upon was a skill set and a base technique level that is beyond most of our generations now.
Yeah. Yeah. If you were making pies every day, you know, you could get the feel of what it looked like. I think nowadays, I mean, we make a lot of pie, but I mean, I still use the scale because, you know, it works the best. It's reliable. But I could see if you were churning out a couple pies a day, maybe you get a feel for it. It's just a little different. But like you said, it's a skill set that, you know, it's just not expected in modern times.
I think it presupposes that you were already taught by a master.
Yeah.
And so you got to
whose
know.
Whose name was Grandma.
Exactly. Yeah. So you knew what it felt like between your fingers. You knew what it looked like or smelled like or sounded like. But if you're starting from scratch and you don't have that.
But that's generationally, that's interesting. It's because you didn't start from scratch. You started with a frozen pie shell now if you're born after 1970.
Yeah.
And just that's how you made a pie. Mm. Whereas, you know, back in the day, it was grandma who taught you. But then mom bought the frozen shell and forgot. And then we got left in the dust.
That's
and
right.
Know nothing about food. Not us three. We are empowered in the food way.
Yes.
So let's talk about pie contests. Well, first of all, how do you even find the pie contest these days? It seems like such a regional, mostly in the South, is something you'd find out at church or something like that. Yeah. How do you find out about... Okay, the first one you entered was in Dahlonega, Georgia.
That's right.
And you mentioned in the book that it was near the Williams-Sonoma outlet store, and that was thus handy.
Exactly. Yeah. You want to go anywhere in Georgia, you got to have a reason to go.
Yeah.
You know? It's like,
it's a long drive up to that.
Yeah. I want to do something on my way out there, you know.
On the way down, on the way back, you're buying a carpet. You know, idea what to do.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
So explain how you figured out that where that contest existed, and then walk me through what you guys did and what were the results.
Yeah, so I'm not even sure how I stumbled across it. I think like on a community events calendar or something. Somehow it made it onto a calendar that I saw. And we had been baking. We hadn't made a ton of
pies
yet.
The North Georgia pie forum.
You know, as one does.
Yeah.
You know.
Chris was just looking for something to do. It's like, oh, hey, there's this thing going on out in Dahlonega. Do you want to give that a whirl?
I'm on the Reddit subreddit. Pie North Georgia fan. Not overly Christian. Yeah.
Yeah, so we went and we each entered a pie. They had entries for sweet pies and savory pies. So I did sweet pie.
I took savory.
Yeah. And we went and entered the pie. You actually had to make two of each pie. So one was for judging, and one they had like a pie buffet.
Yeah.
Because this benefited the Lumpkin County Literacy Coalition. And so we went, we brought our four pies, dropped them off, walked around, walked through the museum, walked into the stores. Great little town. We'd never been there before. And then we checked in at one point and said, do you know when they're going to announce the winner? And they said, oh, I'm not sure. Should be like in an hour. And we're like, okay, well, we've got another hour to kill. So we walked out, walked across the street, and I hear my name called from the gazebo, like in the town square. And I was like, did she just say my name? And I'd won a blue ribbon for the sweet pie. And so
it really is a blue ribbon to get.
Yeah. It was a blue ribbon.
It's a blue ribbon pie.
Yeah.
And what was that pie?
It was the summer strawberry, which is in the book.
Right.
Yeah.
And why'd you win?
Lemon
overtones, wasn't it?
Yeah. No, yeah, I think lemon is a good flavor. I think people really...
I think lemon and strawberry goes really well together.
And it was the height of strawberry season, so really good strawberries.
Did you serve it with ice cream?
No, it was just...
not a la mode?
No, yeah. It was the filling, the lemon curd, and some of the strawberry slices.
Yeah.
Okay, and you served a savory pie.
Right, yeah. So I grew up in the Virgin Islands, and so there's a little savory
in
treat
the American
there.
Virgin Islands?
U.S. Virgin Islands, yes. Yeah.
Beautiful there.
But thank you. Yeah. Yeah, so that's my mother's side of the family's from there. My father's side was the Canadians. But there's this like an empanada. It's referred to as a pâté, so it's a spiced meat filled fried dough contraption.
In Jamaica, it's a patty.
Right. Yeah.
So same thing.
I'm not sure who had it first that it...
patty pate.
Who adulterated the name.
Exactly. But there it is. And so I said, I'm going to make that as a large savory pie.
Was it lamb or beef?
I used lamb. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm sorry. No, I used beef for the contest.
It's spicy.
Yeah. Very spicy. Yeah. Yep. So yeah, scotch bonnets and So,
now you're talking my language because my family is mostly from the Caribbean. They are Canadians, but they live down there in Jamaica and Puerto Rico. And,
oh, really?
Yeah. Oh.
How about that?
My dad was born in Havana. So
did not know that.
They were bankers.
Okay. My family were fishermen. Yeah.
That's cool. It's funny with the Virgin Islands. There's no fish there anymore. Like, you go, they've got a coral problem, and they can't really fish right around it.
They're still able to catch some, but
Yeah. So the savory pie, did it do well in Dahlonega?
It did not. Yeah.
Did
so
it place?
I got nothing. I got zero.
Nothing. You got no ribbon.
I know.
Were you angry?
No, I wasn't angry. Right. I was very happy he won.
Well, good. That is the sign of a good relationship.
And that was the first
marriage.
Thing we learned, too, is doing these, because we've gone on to do other contests. You just learn that I mean, there, you know, a lot of contests have rubrics for scoring, but it's so subjective. So we just decided to sort of make what we like. Like, if we're happy with what we make and enter, then, you know, that's good enough for us. Because it, you get yourself into a trap where you're like, well, is this, like, an acceptable enough flavor? Enough people going to get this? Is this too weird? You know?
Now, were you guys interlopers in this contest? Did you find that? Did you feel that? Like, did everybody else know each other? Oh, Betty Ann's over there with this peanut butter cupcake pie.
Again. I think so. I think one of the moments I remember is we were sitting there eating because they had, like, a pie buffet. You bought tickets and you could sit there and eat. And we were sitting next to someone. And he turned to us and introduced ourselves. And I think, I can't remember what it was, but we knew that he was running for office of some sort. And I think when he learned we were from Atlanta, he just turned and talked to the person on the other side. Like, it was.
Did he have a pie entered?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Because I think a politician with a good pie has a much better chance of winning.
Yeah.
I think that shows some authenticity and understanding of your community that most politicians just don't have mostly these days. It is June right now. It's very early June. What's the ideal pie? Sweet.
Ooh, so I guess that's...
seasonal pie.
Yeah, I'd probably do blueberries. I think there's blueberries in the market right now.
Blueberries everywhere. You know, Georgia is the largest producer of blueberries. We're number one.
We are number one.
We are blue ribbon of blueberries.
That's right. That's right.
It's hard to say.
Blue for blues.
Yeah. It is.
I think the summer strawberry, too, I think is really good. The strawberries are really good right now.
Strawberries are good right now. They're waning, but really good.
Yep.
So talk me through the summer strawberry filling. What's in it?
So it's sort of like if you start with, if you're familiar making with key lime pie, which a lot of people are because it's a more simple pie. So sweetened condensed milk, fresh lemon juice, you know, a little bit of salt. It's in a crumb crust. And then we add pureed strawberries to it and some eggs. You bake that. Doesn't take long. It'll set. Wait till it cools. You make a homemade lemon curd on top. And then some sliced strawberries you put over it. Gives it another little boost of fresh strawberry.
So you're going sliced strawberries and then the curd and then the red. So you're getting some cross-section.
Yeah.
Nice coloring. Yeah. That's cool. And so pies, it's just so interesting that pie is kind of flown under the radar. And is it coming back?
We hope. We're sort of hoping for a pie renaissance. I feel like it's really due for it. I mean, there's just so much. I think we're really hoping more people wake up to it. And I think there's a lot of, there's like artists on Instagram who are doing like pie art and things like that. I think there is a moment, but I also know like from doing the book and, you know, pie can be like a complex dessert. You know, if you do it all from scratch, if you're making your crust, if you're making your filling, if there's a topping, you know, that's work, and some people just don't have time for that. Some people don't want to do it. Some people don't have time for it. But I do think that pie is such a great dessert because you have the crispiness of the crust and this, you know, limitless filling that I really think it deserves a renaissance. If there isn't one, it certainly deserves one.
If you make a fruit pie and you're two people and you're not going to eat all of it, do you put it in the fridge afterwards? Overnight?
For a fruit pie, gosh. Fruit pies definitely have...
These are CDC people. It's okay. Nobody's going to get sick on their watch.
Right. Yeah, no, I guess if those are two separate questions, though. There's a food safety question, and then there's also...
a quality question.
Yeah, so because the fruit pie is going to soften. So from the moment you cut your first slice, the clock is ticking on that pie. It will never be as good as that moment. Because even just as the juices are released, that crust will start to soften eventually. And so
the clock is ticking.
It is.
You make it sound like a suspense thriller. But yes. The clock is ticking.
We only have 14 minutes left on that pie.
Yeah. No, but yeah, so
this episode 24.
Yeah. So the way we handle that is, I mean, we share an awful lot of pie. So, and yeah, if we're doing an experimental pie test, we'll, you know, do one, we'll take our slice, taste it, make our notes as to, you know, what we would change, you know, or, you know, and then we find someone to eat the pie. Yeah.
In the first rendition of that testing pie, it turns out horribly, which neighbor gets it?
So, I mean, if it's a horrible fail, it'll just go in the trash.
Okay.
So
there's nobody on the block who just...
No.
We made you some soup.
Yeah. It's got a little bit of flaky crust to it. Yeah, softening quickly.
Yeah.
Time is ticking.
don't mind those chunks. Yeah. Yeah, no. But if it's really bad, it's got to go. But yeah, for the most part... the version 1.0s, they're usually palatable.
So maple, blueberry, I mean, there's so many good pies. And this style of the top, the way you're using crust and top crust are really interesting. So this maple blueberry pie, without me reading through the full idea of it, are you blind baking any of this?
No, that one's not blind baked.
So it's straightforward, but you're getting brownness on the bottom.
Absolutely.
Now, ovens, you guys talk about the middle rack in your oven and how every oven is different. You should really be temping it somehow and figuring it out. Mm-hmm. But what about convection? Is convection a plus when you're baking a pie, or is it a minus?
Well, I say, so we have a commercial convection oven downstairs in our commercial kitchen. In terms of blind baking a crust, it actually does a much better job of, well, I would say the standard kitchen oven doesn't do a bad job. Probably does a 9 out of 10, only because with a...
Even if it's a still oven?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The convection oven, though, is really, it's much more evenly baked for a blind baked crust.
And is it reducing time as well?
A little bit. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Because we do sort of a lower temperature bake. So we do crust at 350 for about an hour. Other recipes usually probably do around 425 for 30 to 40 minutes.
But that's going to really, 425 seems really high. And but you see it in a lot of recipes. But what that results in is browning with a layer of rawness sort of above it. So
yeah, you have to be careful, like when you take the weights out, when you're tenting,
you know.
So you don't want to tent it while you're, because if you tent it because it's browning too much, then you're going to stop your moisture evacuation. And so,
right, you're creating a contained steam environment, and that'll soften your crust.
Yeah, before you move off that blueberry pie, I just wanted to point out, so that one's one of the pies that the filling is cooked sous vide.
Right.
And so then when you're actually baking the pie, you bake it focusing on getting the crust perfectly done, because I've already dealt with the filling. I don't have to wait for the filling to boil in my pie to thicken the thickener.
Now, in a lot of the recipes do have sous vide, mostly for the fruit filling pies. Mm. Now, you're using a vacuum sealer. Do you think it's entirely necessary, or could you just through displacement use a Ziploc bag?
There's one advantage that you get with the vacuum sealer, and that's you evacuate more air, because fruit has a tendency to float. And so if, as much air as you can get out as possible is nice. And with the just the displacement method, I don't think you're able to get as much air out as you can as with the vacuum. You can certainly add weights.
Will cryovac'd cranberries float like they do in a bog?
They'll still float, yeah. So there's definitely some floats. Some fruits are very floaty.
If you're ever drowning, grab cranberries.
Yeah, so some you will have to weigh them down.
Well, it is a absolutely brilliant book, and it's so interesting to talk to people whose main occupation is nothing really to do with food, but yet can deep dive into it from their perspective of where their smarts and talents lie, and sort of evoke something completely different from something, you know. There are many books on pies. There is not a book like this on pies, which, you know, opens up a whole new perspective. So I'm hoping you do it with the cookies, but then, geez, you could do it with salads. You could do it with so many things.
Yes.
Which is really exciting to see. Paul, Chris, thanks for having me in your kitchen.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming.
And you people go buy the new pie with wonderful pie recipes and beautiful photography by Andy Thomas Lee, Clarkson Potter. Awesome. Thanks, y'all.
Thank you.
Thank you.